So last week, we had talked about a little bit histories of the how the Buddha become enlightened, and before he enlightened, and after he enlightened, what he done for the 7 weeks after his enlightenment. So can any one of you repeat, summarize what we had talked about last week? So you can memorize, see how your understanding is.
Memorize it?
No, just say what we have been discussed last week, talk about last week, so that, some people that who not here last week, they understand a little bit the background of the...
Okay, first he sat for 7 days just to enjoy his being enlightened. And for the second week, he stared at the Bodhi tree in gratitude for the protection it gave him while he sat under it. And the third 7 days, he walked in the air to the Golden Bridge. The fourth week, he sat in the jeweled chamber and colors emanated from him, and these are the colors. The yellow, as it says there, it's holiness. The white is purity, especially of his mind. The blue was his represents his confidence in the path. And as it says up there, the red represents wisdom. The orange represents desirelessness. And the mixed colors represent all his noble qualities. And these are the colors of the Buddhist flag. The fifth week, he sat under a banyan tree, and he was tempted by Mara?
Mara, yeah.
Several times, but he was able to resist. The sixth week, he sat under Mukulinda tree.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And... storms came up, and a cobra coiled 7 times around him and hooded him for the whole week to protect him from the storms. At the end of the week, the cobra transformed into a young man. The seventh week, he sat under a Rajayantana tree.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 men came at the end of the week and offered him rice cakes and honey and took refuge with him. And they were his first lay followers. And these are the 7 things that took place for the 49 days before he moved on to his teaching of the general community.
Yeah, so is that the 7s are marked before he, after he enlightens? He do certain things before he move on. So the one thing that I would like to emphasize is he paying gratitude to the Bodhi trees, because in as a human life, in order to live a meaningful life, we have to pay our thanks and gratitude to everything around. Even the small things. Because without those small things, we might feel a little bit discomfort. For example, if even the slipper you wear, if you don't have a slipper, you might step on thorns, which can be hurt your physical body. So even the slipper is not a non-move things, but we still, as a sentient beings, we still pay gratitude. So that's what the basics in the Buddha did when he first enlightened, because without all the things around, he cannot enlighten. Contribute all, whatever the small thing contribute to his enlightenment. So that's why he do the basic thing first before, the foundation things first before he move on to the teachings. And so that's a little background before we move into the Four Noble Truths teachings of the Buddha. Because you know that the Four Noble Truths is one of the backbone teachings of the Buddha, throughout all his life, everywhere he went, in some different case, in different method, he also teaches, carry the message of the Four Noble Truths, even the last moment in his life. One of the disciples, which he's like 80, he's 80 something years old, his last disciple came to ask him for ordain. And he was asking some other teacher, and he said that it's my last breath. I couldn't tell you in any other teacher enlightened, but what is important for you is to practice the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. That's it's the basic teaching for you to will help you on the path of your practice. So even his last moment in life, he still emphasizes to his disciple. So today we will study the Four Noble Truths, because throughout the teachings, many teachers teach different methods about Four Noble Truths. So the first Noble Truth is the suffering, the existence of suffering. Okay, suffering is, why is suffering is a noble? So sometimes suffering exists in all aspects of life, in ourselves, if we look closest in ourselves, and then it goes to our family, the people that are really close to us, and then it goes a little bit further into our friends, the people, and then into the communities, then it's into society. So suffering exists all over. So that's why in psychology we call suffering is all encompassing, all
encompassing.
So suffering is all encompassing, is like at the first stage, and so suffering is the result. It's not the cause. It's the result. But why is the Buddha teach the result first, then the cause? We have to. Why don't he say the cause first before the result? So that's the question for us to look into. Why is he's presenting the result first before the cause? Because normally we present the cause, right? And then we present the result. So this is the cause and this is the result. But the Buddha, he presents the first noble truth, is the existence of suffering first, which is the result of all our actions. So there is this, in the sutra, they say that all sentient beings, they fear of what happening, but they don't fear of the cause. Because we are in ignorance, sentient beings are mostly we live in half awake and half not awake. So we mostly concerns of the result. We don't concerns of the cause. But the bodhisattva or the arahat, the concern of the cause. But in this world, mostly like 80% is the people that sentient beings live in more in ignorance than in awakening. So he look at the majority than the minority. The minority is the awakened being, which is the bodhisattva and the arahat. And that's minority. You can see in this world is minority. It's very few. Now in this world, it's real hard to find a bodhisattva or arahat. Because you never know. Because those people, they never reveal themselves. But it's really hard, very hard. So that's why the people look at the majority. All these mostly the sentient beings, they live in ignorance. So we have to resolve. And then we mostly look at the results. So the people presents the result first. So that is fit with most majorities of the people. So even though when we go into the voting, when they look at the voting, we take the majority, don't take a look at the minority. The minority have to go with the majority, right? Mm-hmm. So the same thing, that, you know, the Buddha already looked at many thousand years ago, the Buddha already sees the democratic. In his teachings, even the Vinaya, the majority. So the Buddha already carried us the message of democratic many thousand years ago, but we don't know that. You see? Look at that, and because we look deeply, this is just come today, it's come to me today. You see, I sit here like most of the time here, and I contemplate about the teaching. When I teach you, I not just only say I have to look into what my experience, what is I experience the teaching. And I look and say, why? No, because when we study the Dharma, we don't take it for granted, or we don't take it as ignorance. We have to look into the insights and contemplate about the teaching. So every one of us have to do that for ourselves. So in order for the Dharma to make meaning in our life. Otherwise, we take it as a mechanic. And then it will not do any good for our life, for our transformations. In order for the transformation to take place, we have to do a little bit of contemplation, look deeply into the teachings, and in order to it to get effective. The same thing. So when I look at that, I say, wow, you know, the Buddha was so, you know, so profound, you know, his insight. He sees everything. So he sees what his teaching can be benefit for the majority. So after he enlightened, he looked at it. What can I do to benefit the majority of sentient beings who are drowned into the ocean of suffering? We are. In every day, we are drowning in the ocean of sufferings. We're suffering mentally, we're suffering physically, more or less. You know, if your awareness is more, then you are less suffering, you know. But if your awareness is less, then we are drowned in the ocean of suffering. If we live in ignorance, then we will suffer. But the Buddha had very specifics what he's talking about. So he laid out different kind of suffering. He said that suffering of suffering is three kind of suffering. So there is three kind of suffering and eight kind of suffering. So the first one is suffering of suffering. So suffering of suffering is, so when we get this body, it's kind of already suffering, right? Yeah, this body by itself. Because if one condition is lack, it's already suffering, right? So for example, even everything have to be balanced. It's over or less, it's still suffering. For examples, if you have everything, but you're just lacking of water, you're already suffering. Suffering of thirsty. Or if you have a lot of water, for example. So if this world was to... So whenever the flood, you know, whenever it's dry, then we also suffer, you know, in desert. But whenever flood, we also suffering. So even one thing is a lot, and the other thing is less, still suffering. So have to be balance out. So just lacking of one condition for this body is already suffering. So when we're at birth, so you got all this. So because suffering, this three kind of suffering lead into eight kind of suffering. So you already, everyone have that? So this is, we study more like kind of, you know, detail and academic, so you can have the full eye. So this is eight kind of suffering. So the first kind of suffering, is fall into the suffering of birth. So when we was in our mother's womb, right, sometimes you feel like protected, but sometimes you also feel, it depends how your mom live. You are depending on your mother's life. How your mother spent the life, her life. So if your mother was to well take care, you know, her emotionally was well take care, right? Then you've been protected by your mother. maybe your mother was like drug addict, for example, then you'll be suffering too, because whatever your mom intake, it could be damaging part of whatever you are. Because if your mom was over drug addict and it's affecting your physical form, and you can get birth defective, right? So you already suffer at the moment you got conception in your mother's womb. Even though you have been protected, you can be living in paradise in your mother's uterus or umbilical. Everything stick to that. So you can be like have a happy life while you are in your mother's womb. But you, at the same time, I think we have to look at both. You know, I read an article by Thich Nhat Hanh, which is, you know, it's a return home. You know, it's really nice article. You can have a chance to read it, and he say how you've been protected in your mother's womb, and that's the happiest. You know, they call paradise. In Vietnamese, we call tự cung. Tự cung is the palace of palace. Tự cung. But at the same time, when I read that article, it give me a moment of happiness that when I look at in the mother's womb. But on the other side, I can see that we can also suffer at the same time in the mother's womb. You know, that article give me one aspect that I can be feel happy if my mom was happy life, have a happy life, then I feel happy. But what if my mom is alcoholic? Then I can be also suffering too. So I look at the article and I say that, yeah, it's true on one side, but one side we need to look at, you know. So the moment you get birth, and if you're being protected by your mom and you say you feel happy, but after you get birth and you can contact with the air outside, at that moment you've been like kind of suffering, right? Because you feel unsafe because you've been protected in your mother's womb. And you get into contact and then you feel hunger. Because if you was in your mother's womb, then you've been fed by her, through her. And then after you get out that, then you no longer, you even though you still depend on her, but you have to cry, right? And if you're hungry, you have to cry for that, for the food. So at the moment of birth, you already got suffering, right? Suffering is already at the moment of birth. So you cry for food. You cry for meal, for, you know, breastfeed, or, you know, meal feed, you know. But you have to get some movement there. You have to make the movement in order to get feed. So that's why the Buddha say, suffering of birth, and you know it's very painful. You go through the birth canal, you know, because you know the both mother and the children very painful at the moment. You can see, I see on TV, the mom cries. Sometimes it's the mom can be die too. You know, that moment is really like life and death. You know, many young women get birth and die because of the birth process. So birth is suffering for both mom and child, and child. You can see that. And sometimes we grow up and we forget that. And at this moment we're suffering already. We feel the suffering of going to very complicated process. And it can be suffocated too. You know, some child just get out of the birth and they die because of suffocated already. So that's why birth is also suffering. So that at the moment of life, after we have birth, we are already suffering something, but we unknow. We're not knowing that yet. It's in our consciousness. That's why when we grow up in life, and then there's a lot of suffering, and then the memory brings us back. You know, the moment if you in deep meditation, you can see the process. That's why you can see that how painful it is to go through that. And then we go to online. We're so much different. And once slowly, you grow up. And you go to school, for example. You go to school, and you have to communicate with teacher. You have to learn the language. Sometimes learn the language is so difficult, you know. You have so much hard, you know, hardship to go through all this, you know, in school. And sometimes you get punished by the teacher, you know, if you don't obey, you know. You have to kneel down, you know. In Vietnam, we kneel on the jackfruit, you know. Skin of jackfruit, and there's this needle. I don't know whether... Yeah. If you don't obey the teacher, you have to kneel down the corner on the jackfruit, you know, and sometimes you can stand up because it's so painful. See, already it's suffering. I don't know, in America it's different, you know, but in Vietnam, you know, you have to listen totally, this is chicha. If you don't listen, you make noise, you will be knee on the corner on the jackfruit. You know? Yeah, it's painful. So that's why, you know, the movement of life, that. And then, and sometimes, in that process, you feel some happiness, you know? If you got care by, you know, if you good luck, you luck, if you are lucky one, you care by your mom and dad, born in a good family. But you have some kind of happiness, but temporary. You know, in the back, and there's some suffering, you know, creeping already. So, still, you know, suffering is encompassing all our life. To stay from the moon of death. So you can see that why the Buddha was, he's so profound, he see everything through love. But he said he don't deny that there is also happiness. You know, when we study this sutra, I say that, let me see, I have a quote here. In this world, everything is suffering, and even happiness is not real, but temporary. It's not real, here means he doesn't deny that it's not real, but real in the temporary, you know, in a temporary sense. So for example, I just told you an example. When we just buy a car and we feel so happy inside, right? But behind that, there's worry behind that already. You know, someone will scratch my car. You know, if I park on the street, oh my, in my mind, I don't feel safe. I don't feel like safe to put my car on the streets or some, you know, on the neighbor, which areas with a lot of people that is not, you know, a lot of stealer, you know, things going on. Even in happiness, it's contained this kind of suffering or anxiety already. And you buy a new house, for example, and you say, oh, I don't know, you know, I worry about, you know, one day I turn on the heat, you know, or the stove, and I forget, you know, even the new house, and you still, in your mind, you was going somewhere else, but your mind was at the house and see worrying about, you know, whether I turn off the heat or not, or turn off my stove or not. It's happened to me here when I just bought, and I go to school and I have to check my stove because sometimes I forget. I was smiling on my stove many times, and one time I got burned. And yeah, it's even the happiness is on the surface, but in hidden, there's anxiety already, anxiety. Even when I met this couple, and they were two beautiful men and a woman, and this is married. But I asked the man, are you happy? And I say, I'm happy, but I'm worried. Yeah, he said, I say, I'm happy because my wife is too beautiful. And you know, I don't know. He's not in my hand, told in my thoughts, how can you know? I'm happy in the surface. I seem I have I'm very happy about my wife, but inside I worry. You see, it's hidden inside. Even though you have a beautiful husband too, you know, because you don't have a totally control of what. If you don't have totally control on yourself, how can you have total control on other people? See? The external thing you cannot control. It's come and go. That's why men divorce. Many, many couples divorce. Even though they have temporary, marry, you know, a few months, happy, and after that, you know, you go my way, I go my... You go your way, I go my way. that's so, so fragile. Our happiness is so fragile. So fragile. That's where the Buddha... Yeah, yeah, question too.
I guess suffering and happiness is just a state of mind where a person has a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you want to be happy or you want to feel sad, it's rather a choice, a decision that a person's made rather than anything that's permanent.
Yeah, our choice always changes. I want, you know, one moment you get a choice, I want to be happy, but the next moment you make a choice, no, I no longer want to be happy. Because your mind is changing. You know, because our mind is not in a calm and clear state. So that we're always changing, even our mind. You know? So that's why the happiness is so temporary, you know, because our mind changes all the time. And we mostly change for the suffering. Yeah, even though we want happiness, but because of our karmic, our habitual, it's always dragged in that direction. Mm-hmm. In that direction.
But is it true that if a person is living in the moment, so when it's truly happy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how do you know that you are living in the moment? You know, you just only you know, because you are here. But because even though your body is here, but your mind is somewhere else. Nobody knows your mind. It's only you know your mind. So that's why we try to practice to dwell in the moment. We try always to return to the moment. That's the practice. So that's why the Buddha offered that us that method to go back to ourselves. So there's tools to work with that. But first the Buddha, they have to lay out, this is what it is. And then we study that and we say, oh, this is... And then we have to make commitment to ourselves. That's why we have training to take. So that we always fall back in that trap, but at least we have some training for us. It's like an anchor so that we go back to ourselves. So suffering of us. So and then the Buddha says suffering, this is like unavoidable. So the second suffering is suffering of. So when we are born, we already, you know, encounter some kind of suffering in our life. But as a very young, we don't know it, but it's there. But slowly we mature on our process of maturing, and things change. And we also go through different process of changes. And slowly everyone have to get birth, and there is the process of changing, and then we get old, and nobody want to get old, you know, nobody. And when we get old, and then we cannot move, you know, for example, when you get old, and then things falling apart now, slowly, you know, our tea, you know, you want to fall the tea, it's not fall out, you have to fall out, you have to make fake tea, huh? And even our forehead is wrinkled, you know, every morning we look at the mirror and see, try to make different things to make ourselves not wrinkle, but still it's wrinkled. try to smile a lot to wrinkle away, but not. And you know, and then and our hand, sometimes we know we don't want to be shaky, but it's shaky. You know, it's shake. You know, it's trembling. You know, it's uncontrollable. Sometimes myself, even now, and even our ear. Sometimes you know, I talked to my neighbor, and he's just not. He's just middle aged, but sometimes he couldn't have problem with hearing. And I say one thing, he understand a different thing, and then I say, oh, and he come back. I think because of my English, I think. But even our ear, you know, and it's getting well. And then sometimes we're so upset, because sometimes you go to the Dharma class, and you couldn't hear, and if you couldn't hear, and you just got so irritated. Yeah, because you see how people act. Imagine that one day you couldn't hear. How are you going suffering? You are suffering because you want to understand, you know. So that's why one of the teachings of the Buddha is say like, in order to practice the Dharma, we have to hear the Dharma. See, but if we unable to hear the Dharma, how can you understand? See, so if we are lucky, we have still a good ear, huh? We're able to hear the Dharma. One, so there is the 1, 2, 3. So there is the three training in the Dharma. Vang, that means to listen. To listen, you have to have a good ear, right? And then you have to contemplate. And after you able to hear the Dharma, and then you contemplate the Dharma, right? And then you practice. So that's three training. Vang, in Vietnam, we call Vang Tư Tu. Vang có nghĩa là nghe, that means listen, right? And then Tư, that means you think about the Dharma. You contempt about the Dharma, or you reflect about the Dharma. And then you put into application. But if...
I'm sorry. Does hearing here mean a deeper sense of hearing?
What do you mean a deeper sense of hearing?
I mean, for example, sometimes you can walk into a room and you don't really need to hear, but you can feel. Because we are, in a way, connected.
Yeah, you can feel. You know, that's why if your sixth sense, if one of the sixth sense is a defect, then it's contribute to the energy to another. For example, feeling or touching, things like that. The sixth sense. So if one of the sixth sense is defect, then the energy of that sense will be spread out to another five sense. For example, hearing or seeing. You know, but it's hard. You know, but without hearing. So hearing sometimes is good, but sometimes it's not. It's suffering also. If you hear someone say bad about you,
uh-huh.
then you feel suffering, right? Yeah, because it's touching you, you know, it's trying to tickle you, huh? And then you either, sometimes you can laugh, but sometimes you cry. Yeah, cry. And if you do something good, but someone say was try to damage you, try to ruin your reputations, and, you know, speak to you in front of you, curse you, and then that hearing becomes something is not beneficial, right? So that's why hearing the Dharma is more beneficial than hearing and other things. Because hearing the Dharma is because the Dharma have the ability to transform whatever is not comfortable. Transform into comfortable, right? So hearing is so important also. So like always, you know, when our hearing is damaged, then we become suffering. And when our leg is not, you know, normally they want to walk, but now they don't want to walk, you know. And you have to change leg, you know. And you either sit on a wheelchair. And then you feel uncomfortable too, because you feel like low self-esteem, you know. Because you see that, oh, you know, everybody moving around, now I have to depend on other people. And then you're suffering. See, always, all kind of things, you know, always we can suffer. But if we're able to practice the Dharma, then we accept. Then the suffering release. You know that, oh, this is the process I have to go. And you see that everybody have to go through the same thing. So that when you look at that and you see, you know, one day I get old, then when you are young, you don't feel like arrogant. You say, oh, you know, you put other people down. You look down others and say, I can do everything. But you can look down on the old people. See? So the practice is to see that we all get old one day. But we try to pay our respects to the people who is old, who is not able to move, who is not able to hear, and then you give our hand to help. You see that? Because when we see that, and we don't feel nothing is arrogant, nothing is above other. So that. But the process of aging is the unavoidable. Everyone get old. One day I will get old, you know. One day my hand cannot be moving, you know. I cannot hold a pen to write. And then if I don't practice, I feel so low self-esteem. And then I feel a lot of suffering, you know. Because I don't see that. Because I live in ignorance. So we're the same thing. So if we see this process, and then we respect everybody, you know, whether you are young, you know, where you're still healthy, you're beautiful. But you know that one day you get to get old, and then you don't are proud of your, like, beauty and put other people down, you know. So if we see that, understand all the process of aging, then we live very confidently and live comfortably with everyone, you know. Whether you are healthy, whether you are sick, you're still okay. You say, if you're sick, if you're old, and then say, and you look at young people, and then you can see that, oh, one day they still be like me, so where I have to feel so down, you know, then you have to feel down. So a part of that, and then it's release your suffering, you know, release your suffering. So we all healthy here, but one day, who knows, you know, you get sick. So the next one is suffering, illness. Sickness. So the Buddha see that. You know, one day he was a princess, so right? Everyone know that. So one day he traveled on the four gates, and he sees six people. And he looked at himself, and he, at that time, he was so youthful. He's about 30, no, less than 25 something. Yeah, because when he become a monastic, he's 29. So those times he's still, I think, around 25. So 25 is very youthful, right? So he look around and he sees six people on the street. But for us, we just pass by, you know. We have nothing to concern about, you know. And so I'm healthy, what, you know? But he looked back, oh, he asked his the people who take care of the carriage. And he said, oh, one day, am I like that? Six then? Because he mostly lived in the palace and he don't know what is around. So one day he travel outside and see people and say, and he don't know that he one day he was six. So he asked the charioteer, you know, the people who carry, beat the horse.
Charioteer.
Charioteer, yeah. And the charioteer said that, yeah, one day everyone will have to be six, you know. Even though you're young, sometimes still you're six also. So six, sickness is universal. Everyone have to be six one day. So six, illness is a suffering, right? Sometimes you ill and you lie in the bed and nobody visit you and you feel so, oh, I'm so lonely, you know, nobody visit me. And because when you're through, everybody comes around you, and friendship, you know, I have a lot of friends, I go to party, you know, and one day you are sick in the hospital and nobody visit you and you feel so down. Yeah. Lately I went to a hospital. I mostly go to hospital and funeral. I went to a hospital to visit one of our members, and she's ill. But she's so happy. She said, oh, you've been here, I'm ill, I'm so happy already. You know, because you're ready, you're present, you bring happiness to illness people. Because he knows that I'm a monk, she knows that I'm a monk, and I have a lot of work, but she said, you are here, you bring so much happiness. I think my illness will be covered pretty soon. Mm-hmm. She said that, she's so happy inside. So I feel good. You know, I bring my presence, bring happiness to her. And every time I call, you know, even if I don't, I'm busy, I call, I ask her, wonder about, you know. And, but if, while we are still youth, we have to do something, help other people. And because everyone gets sick. So once we're in hospital or some illness, people come, because at that time we feel so lonely. So lonely. I beg. I experienced myself when I was six. Here, if I'm six, nobody come. But if we accept him, we say, oh, you know, it's the time for me to practice, you know. And then when we get six and we practice, you know, if we have the Dharma, and the Dharma really help us, you know, and you don't blame only anyone. You say, why my mom didn't come today, why my sister didn't come today to visit me. If I'm six, well, I'm healthy, you know, they're around me, I can do everything for them. And at the time, a lot of blame, a lot of things arise in your mind. I bet you, I experienced that. So if you have the Dharma and you accept it, say, okay, now this is time for me to practice. This is time for me to get ready to go. I don't have time to blame. You know? Why I blame? For nothing. No time for blaming. Now it's time to contemplate about life. The process of illness. And accept my illness. Because when we are sick, we have a tendency to look outside and blame others. What your parents did to you, what your sister did to you, you know, and what your community did to you. I have did a lot of work to my communities and contribute a lot of work to me. A lot of things come to your mind. Yeah. So we get to get ready. And the Dharma is provided, preparing for us for that. So sickness is everyone have to go through. So we have to prepare that for ourselves. So when we know that and open ourselves and accept, and then if we know that, and then we want to help other people, you know. When someone else in your family says, your friends says, come and visit, you know. Your presence give them a lot of happiness. And they feel surrounded by love. You know, they feel that, oh, they come and they love me. They love me. And you, in that, you comfort them, you know. That means you also comfort yourself. But you are planning the good cause. So one day you get sick, a lot of friends come to visit you. Huh? Mm. So now it's death. Now I have a chance to go to funeral. Today I just came back from funeral, so. So this all is unavoidable. Everyone go through death. It's the moment now you feel sick, and now you fall breath. Now it's the corpse. Huh? Now it's a corpse. Because there is no consciousness in the corpse. But if you don't practice well at the death moment, you have a lot of fear. A lot of fear. And the people around, you know, like feel a lot of, because you are not confident in where you land. You don't know where to go. Yes. We call Đường Đức Mơ Mơ Biết Đi Về Đâu. In one of the teachings of the masters, they say Đường Đức Mơ Mơ Biết Đi Về Đâu. Có nghĩa là our path is like bland, and we don't know where to go after that moment. And we are so so overwhelmed with anxiety. And the more we are worried, the more we are anxiety, and then we are bland ourselves, and we don't know where to go. And we can go into the the worm of the pig or the kitchen or fish, anything you can grab on, because that you try to hold on to life at this moment. And especially if you don't practice well and everyone cry around you, and how can you be calm, you know, to be calm that's enough to determine where you want to go. So that's why if you are practice a well practitioner, you prepare yourself at the moment of death. You say, I release. And at that moment, a lot of grasping coming to yourself. I have a big house, you know, how can I leave my house like this? You know, I read the Book of Death in Tibetan, or Return from the Death. And there's a story. And this is a German man. He built a big, very big house. And at the time of the war, and everything, you know, the house was taken away by, you know, the opposite side, and he was wanting to, he better move out, otherwise, you know, the enemy will come and kill him. And he don't care. He just, you know, hold into the house, and he got killed, and he died. He couldn't move himself out of the house. His consciousness is not able to leave the house, so he just surrounded by the house like that all the time. All the time, he cannot move out because this is. He said, "This door is so beautiful. I have ordered in some other, you know, country, and you know, I have to do it by my hand. You know, everything I do with my hand, and a lot of grasping. Hold on, and we cannot move on to another life. So that's why we at before that we try to let go of everything, even the good deeds. We don't hold on to anything, and let's just be free in clear and calmness." So that you know where to go. So that's what the practice is. Is to prepare you now and prepare you to the moment of death. You know? So that's why we try to practice the moment of awareness. You know, if you're able to make a step right now in awareness, that means you are able. If you're able to continue that awareness, that stability, then the moment of death, you have still have that kind of energy. And you're able to move on to life. So how to prepare your life? The moment you prepare right now, how you live your life right now is how you live the moment of life after death and the process of death. So that's how the Buddha provides, you know, the teachings. Anyone have any question? Robert, you seem to have some question.
No, it's just what you last had said about getting ready for the next life from this life.
So how do we do that, you know? We all want to have a beautiful life. The move and the next life also beautiful. But how we prepare that? It's up to us, here and now. It's not something to think about the future. So that's why the Buddha say that in order to prepare life, you have to prepare right now, in the moment of your breath, in the moment of your step. That's how you prepare your life. If you live happy right now, I bet you will have a happy life after that. Yeah. That's what is the law of cause and effect. So you don't think something about the future, but don't prepare in the present moment. So that's why the Buddha emphasized a lot of the teachings, dwell in the present moment. Live happily in the present moment. You want to die peacefully? You live peacefully now? I bet you are guaranteed for you. That's my guarantee for you. For the moment you die, you will die peacefully. But if you live in anxiety right now, I guarantee your life, your death will be into suffering. I guarantee that's, I bet you on that. Because how we live our life, and that's how we die. So you prepare your life, like you may prepare your die, your death. See? So a death is a suffering for everyone. But if we don't know how to prepare, then you have to worry. So most of us is what we worry about our death and our future. But we don't know how to prepare for the present. That's our witness. So the Buddha helped us to do that. So this four kind of suffering is unavoidable. It's unavoidable. Everyone have to go through. Even the Buddha. See, even the Buddha. You look at the whole lineage of history. The Buddha, many of his great disciples, many patriarchs in Buddhism, and many saints. They all go through this. So what are we? We are the same thing. So when you look at that and you're able to live a deep life, So you understand and embrace all this kind of teaching. And we know what to do. Because we know we have to go all through. Birth, we are ready. We already go through, right? Old age, maybe in the process, right? It's illness in the process. Sometimes we get ill, but sometimes we're not healthy. So how do you prepare? You prepare yourself in the moment of what? Of healthy. In the moment of wellness. That is the moment to prepare. But we can prepare at the same the time of illness also. Because you go through illness, you say that, oh yeah, I'm illness. But sometimes I'm so healthy. So you value the moment that you are healthy. You know what to do. You need what to do. But death, we haven't. Death here is taking process every second. You know, every second, every moment in our life. Because the process of aging is the process of death. You see? Man?
Do you think expectation of life after death and confidence in that has to do with being able to dwell in the present moment?
Oh yeah, have to do a lot. With the, if you are really dwell in the moment, then where are you expecting for death? Because you already live total 100% in the present moment. Then you don't have to worry about that. Or you don't have to expect for death. It's welcome, but uncertainty. It's uncertain. Death is uncertain. It can happen any time, any moment. So that's why in Tibet, there's a story, Tibetan monk, monastics, every time he goes to sleep, he had to clean up his bowl and turn it upside down. And he said that death is, I might not wake up tomorrow, so I have to clean up this so the next people can use. See, he think of other people. He said death. He said death. I can take my last breath, you know, when I sleep, and then I might not wake up tomorrow. So if I wherever I think. Whatever he does, he already prepared for death. He said, death can be happen to me tomorrow or the next moment. So I just, after I finish eating, I just clean up my bowl and turn it so that, you know, it's clean so the next person or my disciple can use it for tomorrow. He prepared for that in every moment. That's how the diligent practitioner should do. And we always forget about that, you know. And we forget about that. We are going to get ill, we are going to get death. And one day that comes and we so panic. Yeah. I go to a lot of funerals. And a lot, every time, it's panic. For the people who die and for the family. Because they don't prepare. See? And then you don't prepare and something happened. That happened that is in the unknown. And you get into panic. Today, I go into piano. The whole family cry, like dead, you know, like they cry. And because they don't live fully with that person, their mom, but because they don't take care of her, or they don't live fully. So they feel regret. They feel sorry. It's too late, you know. You don't live fully with yourself and with the person who are close to you, your mom and your dad.
Sometimes it can be just the fact of you're loving someone.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really love someone, it hurts. Just like what love is about. Because if you're not experiencing the pain, the hurt, then perhaps you're not loving. So it's maybe not regretting that they didn't take good care of her or provide her a good life. But rather the fact that they really love her.
There's two things that when they cry, is one is to regret that they don't fulfill, they don't live fully with that person. And the other is like, oh, she's so good, how can I lose her? And the self fish here. You see, I say, if she's still alive, you know, she can take care of me and, you know, bring me food and things like that. And now I lost her, right? But if you are truly loved, you should, you know, come and pray for her, and you know, and wish her to go into the next destination, which is something that's good for her life, for her next rebirth, right? But if we regret because we don't fulfill our responsibility, we don't value that person while they are alive, or others that say that we lost her because she's so lovable, you know, she's so taking care, you know, everything in the house will be taken care by her, and now she's gone, you know, we lost that part, right? But if we live fully and then we say, oh, you know, I really live fully while she's alive, I do my best to be love her, and see being taken care of me, and we live fully. If we are joy in the present and we know value that person's life, then you say, now is the time for her to depart to the next life. Something is beautiful for her, you know. So we wish her to be reborn into the beautiful realms, you know, to the place that she wishes and have the Dharma that she can practice and transform her life and make more benefit for herself and for others. I think that's what we wish, right? Bob, you seem to have anything to say? About life and death?
Oh, I was having a thought. kind of a mind game I play with myself at times is the way to live forever is to always be in the present moment, because then the future never gets here. So you're always living forever because you're always in the present moment. So there's no future to be worried about. So you're always in the present moment, so you're always alive.
Yeah, because in the present moment they contain the future, the past. In order to exist here, you have to be so previous, you know, moment, in order for this moment to exist, right? So this moment also contains the past, but it also contains the future, and also contains the present. So in the moment, contain three: the present, the past, and the future. So if you're able to live fully, that's why the Buddha so much emphasized on the present moment and live fully in the present, aware fully in the present moment, so that you don't have to worry about the future. But the future is there, why are you worried? So you live in the future, in the present moment. That's the teaching of the Buddha. Dwell in the present moment. So you dwell in the present, that means you dwell in the past. You carry the past. But you also carry the future. But that's the best, to prepare. That's the best. Eloise?
Sometimes, when I'm sick, with the flu or cold or something like that, I find that if I am open to it, teachings come to me about my life and about how perhaps I could redirect my life so that there is that part of it's the other side of the suffering, because at the time I'm all... So far, I've always been somewhat angry that I'm sick. I don't like to be sick. However, if I can give in to it and say, okay, what is it I'm meant to learn? Then I look at the experience very differently. Well, somewhat differently.
Yeah, when you're sick, if you resist to sick, then you become more sick. But you open and relax, and you know, it's, and then it slowly dissipates the pain in your... Because what makes us a lot of pain is our resistance to the illness, to the sickness. But we are relaxed and accepting it, and it slowly... It's, the pain is there, but it slowly dissipates because there is no force of resistance. There's no force of resistance. So when we are sick, we have the tendency either to regret... Blame
ourselves
and others,
yeah.
And sometimes we get angry and then we get more sick. Yes, but if we're able to accept, relax, and contemplate into the nature of illness, then slowly the illness will be recovered, because you have the energies of recovery, because your body is able to relax and the cells, the new cell is born. The anti, secret the anti, so happy illness. So that's why the animals sometimes they got injury and they just really lie down and relax, you know, in safety place, and not the thing, just relax, and there's automatic recovery. So the animal is very intelligent, but ourselves, when someone we sick, we think all kind of thinking come to our minds, and sometimes the physical is less sick, but the mind is more sick. and then it intends the illness. Yeah. You know, the Buddha, he's sick too, you know, he's very painful. When he eats after the dinner, after the dinner, he's very ill, But because his mind is so calm, and he just practice of letting go, and he's able to walk. You know, after he eat the dinner in the one of the family, one of the men's house, the what his name I forget. Yeah, and he's so ill. But because of his concentration, his calmness, and then he able to walk to the place that he want to pass away. See, and then how's because his mind. But for us, he's so you know fear and you know the fear is so intense in us. It's make us more use. So just whenever you illness is a chance for us to practice impermanence. But no, if you don't practice every day, it's really hard to practice impermanent illness. But if you're able to draw in that, then your illness easy, you know, slowly to dissipate, you know, and or less. Okay. So I have so this is fall under the kind of suffering of suffering. And I will share with you the other falls next time. So this is not for us to depress or you know, but for us to practice and contemplate about that the process of birth, always sickness and death. Benjamin,
some of our suffering is our suffering and our fault, our lack of practice. Mm-hmm. It seems like some of our suffering is just being in touch with the totality, mm-hmm. the interbeing. There is a lot of suffering out mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're open to being in touch with everything,
mm-hmm.
we're also going to feel suffering. The suffering of the world.
Yes.
The suffering
yes.
of people who are in trouble.
Yeah, because we are interconnected.
We have no faith.
Yeah. So that's why the practice is to prepare ourselves. So I'll give you a story. There is one day, you know, the king, he ran out to run. He's no run exercise. And one day he twists his leg, and he couldn't. Next day it's getting big, you know, like flaming, and he would say, "He's telling, oh, who doing the roll? You know, who making the roll? So it's not smooth, and it's a lot of, so that I run and then I twist my leg." And he keep an orders for his member to you know pay every roll, you know, to put the cabbage in every walk, in every. In every row that he run exercise. So one day, one of his assistant came and said, "King, you know, if you do that, there's a lot of we have a lot of carpet. I don't think we have enough carpet to cover all the row. But so I suggest that you better put on the leather shoes, so you can run everywhere. So we don't have to make people to put carpet everywhere. So everywhere is suffering. So if you put, you're able to cover yourself with the feet." And you can walk everywhere. You don't have to care about tones, or you know, like some other things. So the same thing. If we have able to do ourselves and protect ourselves, and because the world, I say that you say it's a full suffering. That's why the Buddha say the world is full suffering. But we able to do something doesn't mean we are helpless. You know, we cannot change the world, but we can change ourselves. Can you? I think we can, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can change the world's suffering. But we can change our suffering if we're able to draw in the practice and able to apply the teaching of the Buddha. And we can change ourselves. So in order to change anything, we have to change ourselves. We don't make command other people, and then we make ourselves suffering because we demand everyone to change. But we don't change ourselves, and then we're more suffering, right? So the world is full of suffering, but there's something that we can do about the suffering in the world. So first we have to practice and change ourselves. And ourselves is in drought and happiness. At least we can help ourselves and the people around. And slowly, if we have the capacities, our energy is big enough, we can able to do that. You know, when the Buddha born in India, it's a lot of suffering. India is the place that the most suffering in the world. You can see, you can go in the next wheel, I see a movie, but I haven't been there. But a lot of caste system there. Not freedom. Suffering the most. The Buddha born in the place that the most suffering. But he able to change himself and change and slowly he changed. But still now, when he passed away, you know, other Hinduism or Muslim dominates and destroys Buddhism. No? So but he changed himself. and his teaching changed a lot of people. That's why we're able to benefit from his teaching today. We are not Indian people, but we can benefit, right? So that we can change ourselves. So suffering, I think, is even you can make a step out here, you are already suffering because you don't be careful, you twist yourself and you fall down, you are already suffering. Yeah, suffering is there. But also, if we are a little bit careful, we step, make a solid step carefully, and then we can do that, right? We can do something to change our suffering. But others, it's hard. But first, we have to change ourselves and make ourselves happy. So that's that we have the limits. We have that kind of control. So today, I just would like to share with you the four kind of sufferings. And next time, I will share with you the other four kinds of sufferings. To learn about suffering is to contemplate and practice. It doesn't mean when we learn about suffering, doesn't mean we are depressed, we are disappointed about suffering. There's a way for us to work with suffering. We don't run away from suffering. So that's why the Buddha says suffering is noble. Without suffering, there is no happiness because we don't know the value. Because, for example, without hungry, you don't know the value of food. You know, when you eat food, you say because you know that you're hungry. So food come to help you to fulfill that. So you know the value of the food and the value of have something to eat. So without suffering, we were not able to taste in the state of happiness, of blissful. So that's why the Buddha say suffering is noble. But noble in a way that we know how to work with it. But if we don't know how to work, then we drown in the ocean of suffering. Then the noble of suffering now become unnoble, right? Isn't it become unnoble? Yeah. So once again, thank you very much for your listening. Okay, we will stop here and so sit and relax. I will invite Twisa the bell to end our sharing of teaching today.